preacher was addressing the people one Sunday, trying to impress them upon the importance of religion. All you people of this congregation who cried from the pulpit, one day you're going to die. Do you hear me? All you people of this congregation, one day you're going to die. One little man sitting in the front pew started to laugh as the preacher asked him, "What's so funny?" The man said, "I don't belong to the congregation." I want to remind all of the new people and those who are interested in attending that Dale will be holding a class tomorrow evening for beginners and to teach some of the techniques. Also, there will be a kirtan at their home on Friday evening at 8 o'clock, and the address is on the bulletin board. Someone gave me this little book on Sunday, and I said to the individual, "Well, I don't know when I'm going to have time to read it, because people give me books by baskets full, and I'm so busy all the time that I have very little reading time. Not that I don't like to read, I do very much so, but anyway, all of a sudden tonight I have the book in my hand, and I find that it is filled with jewels of wisdom. I'd like to read this one to you. The book is entitled Quiet Talks with the Master by Eva Bell Werber, and she certainly must be a very great soul. This is entitled The Dawn. "My beloved, the new day is at hand. The birds are awakening. The air is soft and sweet. And for you also, a new day is dawning. You feel that you have lived, have loved, have rejoiced in sorrow. But I say to you, that which has seemed of such importance is only as the threads of silken web drawing you up to me. Your life shall unfold. You are, as it were, but at the beginning of that which never began. The page lies fresh and white before you, even as does the new day. All things shall rule you no more. Old ways shall tempt you no more. You shall go on and up the sunlit path with me. If at times you seem to be back again, and the old familiar ways seem to take possession of you, only turn within and know that the one who dwells on the throne of your heart is, after all, that which is eternal. As you do your work, as you meet my children on the path, you will be love-filled and understanding, for it shall be the Christ in you who sees and works. All things shall be done with me and by me, and all your days shall be made a thing of beauty. Never shall you want, and never shall you lack, for I know not either state. When we function as one, you cannot experience that which I do not know." Our Bible reading tonight is from Romans chapter 8, beginning with verse 16. "The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, and if children, then heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope, because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. Likewise the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities. For we know not what we should pray for as we ought, But the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. And he that searches the heart knoweth what is the mind of the Spirit, because he maketh intercession for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. I think that's a wonderful, those are wonderful verses. And this last one especially. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. I want to talk to you tonight about the dawn of a new life. We keep plugging away. I keep giving you sermons and lectures. I keep giving you love. I speak to you and try to entice you into leading the good life, the spiritual life, so that you may find your oneness with God. Always I am pushing, and sometimes I push so hard that it seems like a spank behind, perhaps. But I'm in such a hurry for you to get there, whether you are or not, you see, and that's why. Many people come to me and make certain remarks to me, and I answer them off the cuff. And I want you to know that not every word which comes from my jewel lips is a word of wisdom given from God, by God. I do it off the top of my mind as you come by. All is of God, this is true. But there is one thing I want you to know, and that is that you must use your own will. You must learn to stand on your own two feet and make your own decisions, because neither I nor anyone else has the right to live your life for you. You must learn to live it yourself. And this is the purpose for which we are brought together, that you may learn to live the good life, so that you may one day know that regardless of what has ever happened in your lifetime, that it is all working for good because you love God. And when you come to that understanding, that feeling, that expression of love for God within your heart, when he is the most important thing in all the world to you, more important than any member of your family, any possession which you might have, anything which you want to do, any dream, even the farthest one which you may have, then you will know that all things, that all goals, that all people, that all dreams are contained only in him and him alone. I am here to help you to become masters of yourself. I am not here to be the master of you in the sense that I am the dictator, I am on a power trip, I am on an ego trip, or anything else of that nature. I came to show you the way. I went the way myself because a very great master came into my life, and he taught me the way. He expanded my consciousness, he expanded my heart, and he put a desire for God within me so strongly that it became a conflagration. And it burned, and it burned, and it burned. And as I went on, I went through many, many things in my lifetime. And as I look back at this life of mine, and I see the tremendously hard things I had to come through, I wonder now, looking back at it, how in the world I was ever given strength to do it. But you see, you can always live one moment at a time. You can't live yesterday. You can't even live the moment that has just passed, because it is in the past. And whatever that moment contained has become a part of what you are this moment. You cannot live in the future except in your dreams, because the future has not yet arrived. So you can only live this moment. And if you will learn to live it in the fullness of God, then you will sow the good seed, because remember that the Christ said, as you sow, so shall you reap. Now this human nature, this creature that is spoken of in this chapter tonight, is the human ego. It is that which thinks of itself as being separate from God. It thinks of itself as having the power to think, to speak, to act. It thinks of originating all of the power to do these things within itself. And so it takes the full credit and the full glory. But if we carry it beyond this human concept, we know that if it were not that this body is recharged, if it were not fed with the thoughts, with the words, with the power to act, that we would not be able to lift even our little finger to do one single thing. There are many calls that are coming over my telephone today. Many times somebody comes frantically and rings the doorbell without an appointment, without regard of whether I have an appointment or whether I have time to see them or anything, because they're in such tremendous travail, as it talks about in this chapter, that they have to see me, they have to get rid of the burden, they have to get help. And they think that what they're going through is either very, very bad for them, or is just plain outright evil. This has happened to them, or they haven't been able to have enough of what they need, or someone has done some terrible thing to them, or else they themselves have done some terrible thing. And they want to unload. They want to get free from it. And the whole world is full of that today. Everything and everybody seems to be in an uproar. But in the midst of the seeming uproar of the multitudes, you find the steady growth of those people who really love God, who really want to become masters of themselves, to go beyond that which is orthodox, that which is the beginning steps, and find the true oneness with God through whatever path, on whatever path it takes, and through whatever experiences it takes to get them there. And when you come to that moment, when you are ready to surrender yourself, everything you have, everyone that you think you call your own, and lay it at the feet of God, then He will lift you up and He will start putting you through tremendous experiences. These experiences are difficult, no doubt. To go along in a common everyday way and say your prayers, to attend church once a week, maybe twice a week, is not sufficient. It isn't going to get you there. But you see, each one chooses that particular greater school which his consciousness is ready to receive. And so he is given, he is fed the food of spirit which he is able to embrace at that particular time. But a lot of the fault lies at the feet of the church, you might say, because they do not tell the people the truth, even though it is right in the scriptures, the kingdom of heaven is within. Still, they teach the people to look for the second coming of the Christ outside of themselves. That kingdom is within, and Christ will only come a second time out of the cloud of your own consciousness, as I have told you many times, when you have sufficiently prepared yourself to receive Him. And He wants total surrender. Total surrender. I was having dinner with someone last evening, and they said that even after you went through these tremendous experiences, even after you felt your oneness with God, still as you continued to live in a human body, you were accountable individually for everything you did. And they still were putting it on a human, a personal basis. And I said, that is not so. I said, you cannot at one and the same time be totally, and when I say the word total, I mean exactly that, totally surrendered to God, so that you have no will of your own except to do the will of God. When you are so fully open to Him that only His thoughts, His words, His actions pour forth from you, then you are not personally responsible in that sense for your actions. You are watching what the Christ in you is doing. You cannot at one and the same time be personally responsible in the human sense and be totally surrendered to God. You have turned the whole kingdom, that which is within yourself, that which you formerly called you yourself, the small I, which seems very large sometimes, and laid it over at the feet of God. You have gone through tremendous experiences. You have perhaps experienced great pain. But you have given all of yourself to God. And you are just the witness So I explained to this one that certainly the responsibility is still there, but so also is the suffering and the happiness and the joy, just as it was before. The only difference was that before you were trying to straighten out your life, you were trying to change it, you were trying to make yourself a better person, you were trying to love God more, and we have to try sometimes in the beginning because it doesn't always happen spontaneously. Many people have come to me and asked me to pray, "Mother, I want to love God so much. Help me to love Him more. Pray to Him that I may love Him." If God knows that you want to love Him, He will open up your heart if you will go to Him. He really will. And pretty soon you will find a love and a longing for God inside of yourself that is so great that you cannot contain it. I was reading a little item about Mother Teresa of Calcutta today, the great spiritual mother over there. And she was talking about when the sisters take their final vows. And she told in very moving words the marriage between the individual soul of each sister when she became the bride of Christ. And I think that's a beautiful idea. They even take a wedding ring, and they want no other marriage but that marriage of the soul with the Christ whom they have been taught lived 2,000 years ago in one form. But it is the marriage of the Christ within yourself. And just because you take that vow of marriage in the beginning, you see, doesn't mean that you're able to fulfill all that it requires of you right in the beginning. Because you have to put your feet on the path. And just like in any marriage, which is a new experience, you have to start out on that path and you have to learn through the trial and the error method. And so it is with all of life. So it is with everyone who calls himself a Christian, everyone who calls himself a Hindu, everyone who calls himself a Muslim, a Buddhist. It doesn't make any difference. He is looking for that marriage with God, union with God, it is called. But we have this idea of evil placed before us so greatly all the time that we don't see that every single thing that happens to us, regardless of how difficult it is, how hard for us to overcome, how much suffering it brings, is but that which God has given us for the moment, or which we have brought upon ourselves, whichever way you care to look about at it, that will one day bring us to that state of purification, of realization. If you will look at the word evil, you will see that it is the word live spelled backwards. So if you will turn that evil, which is a thing of poor judgment, of perhaps making mistakes, and turn it into the word live, and learn to drink at that fountain of life, that wine of the Spirit, then your whole lives will change, never to be the same again. But remember this, and remember it well, that nobody is going to do it for you. Nobody can do it for you. Now, with all of the things that come to me, "Mother, I have these choices. Sometimes it's 2, sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's 4. I need your help." And what they're asking me to do is to tell them which choice to make, because I'm supposed to know which is best for them, which is for their highest good. And regardless of whether or not I know, I'm not about to tell them. Because I'm not about to make spiritual cripples out of them. I'm not about to make them slaves. When someone is referred to a master in the spiritual sense, it is not that they are the master of the people. It is that they are the master of themselves. And they come but for the sole purpose of teaching the truth which they themselves have experienced, through the suffering which they have gone through and through the bliss which they have experienced as a result of that suffering. They come to teach the truth and the way. Remember the Christ said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody can come to the Father except through me." And that is true, because you cannot go to that high place, that castle within yourself where the King resides, unless you are willing to give all of yourself, every little part of yourself. And you have to go by His way, not your own. You have to follow the Son of God within yourself, that Christ is one, not the Son of Man, the creature that is full of all of the so-called evil and sins of separation from God. We have been taught so erroneously, you know, before the Christian Bible ever existed, even the Old Testament, man has existed upon this earth for millions and millions of years. And yet we are told the story of Adam and Eve as though they were the first man and the first woman. And then it speaks about their having two sons, Cain and Abel. And then it speaks of other people. And there were many people in a certain city. Well, if these were the first man and the first woman, and they had two sons, then where did all the other people come from? You see, it's a thing of allegory. It speaks of the fall from the consciousness of oneness with God. It speaks of the temptation of the senses and how man then turns his face away from God and he turns his face to so-called evil, which is to live backwards. And so what we're going to do and what we try to do in everything that we teach here is to teach you to live the good life, to teach you the true meaning of Christ's words, that the kingdom of heaven is within you, that this is the temple of the living God, and that He is that one, and that He is your real self, or that God within you, and not this little silly ego that goes out and gets itself into all sorts of trouble. Now the one word that stands out when you go the wrong way is judgment. Now you can use that word in many ways. You can use judgment to pass judgment on someone who has committed a crime. You can use the word judgment to judge somebody and put them on the head of a pin and say that they are beyond the pale, that they have done wrong, simply because they do not agree with your idea of what is right and wrong. But how do you know what is right and wrong for them? You can only determine that for yourself. Because sometimes out of the greatest so-called evil comes great, great suffering. And through that suffering comes purification. And through that purification comes the desire to turn your face to God and to start in to live a totally new life, lived in Him alone. You don't want any more of that suffering. You've had too much skin rubbed off your nose. You've been dragged in the dirt. You're bruised, you're tired, you're sore, you're bleeding. And you found out that you didn't have any friends. And you found out that the only friend you had was that friend that dwells in your consciousness and in your heart. Sometimes people are reduced to that, and it is vitally necessary. And when you come to that last mile, just as the same as all of the disciples deserted Jesus, you find yourself in the same spot, that the whole world is against you. And you are left in the Garden of Gethsemane alone with your Lord. And it is just between you and Him. It is a very lonely spot to be. And sometimes your heart cries out for the understanding in the human sense, for the love, for the attention, for one friend that you have. I know. I was there. And I didn't find any. Except my good shepherd saw me such a number. He understood. He was my friend. And yet he was under the jurisdiction of someone else who was putting me through my paces in the spiritual sense, giving me no quarter anywhere. Why do you need it when I reached out for comfort, for help, for understanding, for friendship in the human sense? But do you know something? He did me the greatest service, this man who would give me no quarter, who wouldn't even give me so-called understanding as far as I could see. Nothing in the human sense. He did me the greatest service because I had no place else to turn but to God. And that was the purpose for which I was there, to find my oneness with God, my God realization. So we're always looking for the easy way out in the human sense. And we don't realize that the trials and the tribulations which come to us are but those precious jewels of experience which are necessary to teach us lessons and drive us to put our feet upon the path so that in truth we may climb into the castle of God's infinite presence. And when you finally give that last or do that full last act of surrender, there is such a feeling of relief because you no longer have the responsibility. As I told this individual that made this remark that you're still responsible for what comes out of you, yes, you are, but in a totally different sense. Because wherefore you paid the price for your human self, the Son of Man. Now, having gone the full way, having picked up your cross, which is your body, and followed the Christ and emulated him even unto the death of your human ego, that ghost, which thinks of itself as being real and which is just a ghost, you find within yourself the power of the divine ego, the Christ is one, the Holy Ghost. And you find that you have a world of bliss. And it's tremendous, but there is also pain, there is also suffering, there is also everything that you ever had in the human sense, if you have been appointed by God to be a teacher to all of mankind. Because where before you suffered for your own human self and your failings, then later you suffer for the many, and with them that you have been appointed to help to realize God within themselves. There is no surcease of it all, at all. And you have the same feelings, humanly and divinely, that you had before. The difference is that now you know the truth. Now you are the master of yourself. Now you are no longer affected in the really personal way. You can tell about something personal that has affected you, but actually there isn't any pain. It's a description of what has happened. You do react. Sometimes you do feel pain. But you sort of build up a barricade around yourself. And it is a barricade of God's love. And you know that whoever comes to you in that state, whatever they say, is in a particular spot on the way to God. And they can't be anyplace else. So you try to discover the cause, the reason that they are in that spot. And in that attempt at discovery, you get understanding of why they act the way they do. But don't forget that when you have paid the full price, that anyone who comes before you after that sees reflected in you that which is within their own consciousness. You become the mirror through which they see the reflection of their own soul. Perhaps their strengths, their weaknesses, the nastiness, the judgment, and all the beauty, the wonder, the glory, and the bliss. That is the truth. And you know, this is true of each and every one of us. If we didn't have so-called evil within us, we couldn't see so-called evil in anyone else. We would know that all of this that we are going through is God living his life. Because if he is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, as I say so many times, there is only the one. There is that one great body of God, of Christ, which is God made manifest in the world, the carpenter of the universe. And we are all the separate cells of his body. And only as we function in harmony, only as we keep our own individual cell in good health, physically, mentally, morally, spiritually, emotionally, every way, are we going to have the body of God function as it should? And you can see how many cells are in a state of disease at the moment because there is so much dissension all over the world. And it's going to come to a head just like a boil. Now, as I've said many times before, you can use a knife and lance it with a good clean stroke. And you can take all of the badness out. Or you can be afraid to do that. And you can let it fester and break open, and it leaves an ugly scar. And each one comes to that point in life where they have this boil that has been mounting within themselves of all that they have done that has taken them away from God in their acts and in their consciousness. And they have the choice of continuing on, fighting the evil, groping with it, fighting with it, and trying to overcome it, or of taking a good clean swipe with a good surgeon's knife and cutting open the boil, let all the badness out, and totally surrender themselves to God. In that way, they will have a clean wound, and they will be cleansed, they will be purified, they will be healed. and they become children of light. All things work together for good for the one who loves God. I keep repeating that, and I will keep repeating it because I know that it is true. My own life, as I have described many, many times, has been so very, very difficult. I had very little to eat, one outfit to wear on my body. I had burdens that were unbelievably hard. I was responsible for supporting a whole family by myself and yet taking care of them under very adverse conditions. But I consider those years as the greatest years of growth now that I look back at them in all the world, because I had nothing, any place, and I had nowhere to go but to God. And so He became my anchor. He became my lover, if you will. I told Him all of my problems. I went to Him for help. I shared everything with Him. I asked for His help and His guidance. And this is what we must do instead of chattering on the outside all the time. If we would go within and tell God about our problems and then be silent, be still, so that you can hear the voice of God answering you. He will answer in many different ways, through your feelings, through a certain knowledge that comes to you. I've even heard a voice speaking outwardly, just as I can hear my voice speaking to you. You can see it through a vision, but God will speak to you if you will go to Him. But if you're constantly chattering on the outside, it won't get you any place. You know, once there were two geese that were going to fly through the air, and they saw a turtle on the ground. And the turtle wanted to fly with them. And so they got hold of a stick, and each goose took the part of the stick in their mouths, and they told the turtle to take it in his mouth in the middle, and that they would carry them wherever they were going. But they told him that he must be very careful not to open his mouth, or he would fall and be hurt. Well, everything went along fine. The turtle was just thrilled to be getting this free ride through the air. And all of a sudden, they came over the courtyard of the king. And the turtle was so impressed to think that he was over the courtyard of the king that he became very excited. And all of those in the courtyard, seeing the two geese carrying a turtle that was hanging onto a stick carried by each of them in their mouths, looked up and said, "Oh, look at that. Look at that crazy turtle hanging on to the stick carried by these two geese." And he took it as a personal affront, and he became so angry that he wanted to tell them about it. He let go of the stick, and he fell right in the courtyard of the king. Well, the prime minister of the king told the king what had happened. And the king talked enough. So he thought that it would be a good time to teach him a good lesson. So the king wanted to know what had happened. He said, "Well, Your Majesty," he said, "there were two geese who were flying through the air, and they had a stick in their mouths, and they were carrying a turtle who was hanging onto that stick with his mouth. But when they got over the courtyard, all of us got so excited, we started thinking how funny it was that this turtle was being carried. So we raised our voices, we talked about it, and the turtle became incensed. He let go of the stick, and he fell." And he said, "That's what happens to people that talk too much." He said, "They fall flat on their faces." Well, the king got the idea, and he changed his ways. So, if you will go inside and talk to your Lord, you will find that He will answer you. He will also comfort you. He will show you the way. I am so closely tuned to Him that when somebody is concentrating on me, specifically in Bethel, and especially someone with power, I can go to the telephone and I can call that person and discuss with them what they're doing. And I did this yesterday. Somebody was concentrating on me very definitely, and I was getting it in every part of my being. So when I got home, I went to the telephone and asked them what they were doing. So God does speak to you, and you get so that you can feel. You can get things about other people. You don't go after them because it's not your business to do so. But if God brings it to you, then it is something which He wants you to have, so that you may handle it in whatever way He directs. If you give yourself to God, You can't be doing something at one and the same time and have turned it over to him completely. That surrender must be absolute and complete, with no thought of self-doing, no thought of self-glory, no thought of anything of your little self, but of listening to the will of God and putting it through. If you would, instead of always thinking about your problems, say to yourself, what shall I do about this? I'm in trouble. What shall I do? If you would go inside of yourself, forget your problem, go up above the problem and say, Lord, what is thy will? And then go by the direction you get inside. You would find that the problem disappeared. And even if there was one left, you wouldn't have the responsibility for it, but you would have placed it where it properly belongs, at the feet of the Christ. Come to me, all of you who are burdened and heavy laden, and I shall give you rest. He wants you to lay your burdens at his feet. He wants you to lay the loads which you pack on your own back and feel totally responsible for in a personal way at his feet. This is the greatest gift you can give him, because in so doing, you empty yourself of your little self and you make room for the Christ within you to express himself in all of his wonder and his glory. And it's when you do that alone, when you cease finding excuses why you cannot put your full attention upon him, why you cannot do this for him or that for him, why you cannot attend a service which is going to be focused upon God. And if you will stop making excuses and do what you know deep down in your inner being, your inner heart, that you should do, then the path will become clear. And you will build a whole new life for yourself. And every problem that comes to you then will not be a problem at all, but it will be a challenge. It will be a thing which is put before you to overcome. And if you have the fighting spirit in you, the adventurous spirit, that is willing to go out and conquer new lands, you will use this God-given talent of reason, of judgment, of feeling, of all the rest of the things that he has given us so abundantly, and find a way through that problem, around it, above it, underneath it, or something. And when you put all of that power of solving that problem into action, you will find that it will disappear. And in its place, you will have gained a power within yourself. It is a power called self-mastery. It is a power that is given you through overcoming obstacles, not crying about them, not succumbing to them, not giving up something that you don't want, but by listening to the voice of God and doing his will alone. Listen to him. We come not to worship one another. We come to worship the God who is in each and every one of us, and yet who is far and above, beyond, and in everything else. Any religion that doesn't recognize a superior intelligence that has the power to wet the earth when it is dry, to give it water to drink, to make things grow so that all of the living creatures may be fed, that puts the sun and the moon and the stars in the sky at a given time each day. Anyone who doesn't recognize that, any religion that doesn't recognize that, is no real religion at all, because it has stopped halfway. It hasn't taken everything into account, because there's no place, not one single little tiny place in all of the universes and beyond where God is not, but the Christ and the kingdom of heaven are to be found within yourself. So become that Christed one. Know that all things work together for good if you love God. And make that love grow in your hearts until it fills every part of your being and spills out. And that everybody you meet feels that great love of God and is attracted to God in you, so that you can in turn teach him the truth that he has God in him, and help him to go within himself and find him there. This is a tremendous thing, as all things work together for good for the one that loves God. And even though you don't love God at all, still, it is he alone who puts you through all of the experiences which will one day bring you to that very wonderful realization. that all things work together for God, for the one who loves God, for good, I should say. This is the truth. I have proven it in my own life, and some of the most terrific things I've had to overcome have turned out to be the greatest riches in the world. Because where I looked for the things of the senses before, as everyone does, for the good life, things that would make me comfortable, enjoy them, now I look for the jewels of the Spirit. And when you find that pearl that is hidden in the heart of the lotus, which is to be found in the consciousness, in your consciousness, when that thousand-petal lotus of the brain opens up because you have loved God so greatly, then he spills that nectar, that wine, that light throughout your entire being, and you are filled forever with the bliss of his infinite presence.